We left off at public safety. I think all the members have got a kind of a tentative time schedule that we circulated so that people would know about when we would get to what area of the budget. So we have Jay Hogan with us today. Would you join us at the end of the table? And we're at public safety. We also have Barbara Mitchell. If you want to join us at the same time, we'll go through public safety. And it might be appropriate just to ask some general questions of Mr. Hogan, because he wasn't able to be with us at the last starting meeting. And why don't we open it for that if there are general questions on the areas that we've already covered. Senator Fisher, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jay, in the health and social service budget, in their capital request, they have $2 million in capital. In the jobs bill, they take $1 million from there and put it in the jobs bill. Now, is the capital budget going to be reduced that $1 million?
Mr. Chairman, Jay Hogan, Director of Budget Review. Yes, that is a transfer of that appropriation from the governor's original capital budget to the jobs bill. And the description of the $2 million, of course, has to be adjusted for the fact that the number is not $2 million. It's my understanding the department is trying to prepare a list of what the $1 million consists of.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chairman, the other is, and there may be a typo error, in the jobs bill for health and social service, we're talking about the projects will be undertaken the summer of 88 and completed within 89, and yet in the completion date up at the top it says that's FY91. Is that an error, and should it be...
Mr. Chairman, I would think it is. Obviously, when the projects were moved from the regular capital budget with its normal dates to the jobs bill, it meant that with the money they would have to come up with a different mix of projects, and they would have to be geared towards rapid starts and completion within the time frame of the rest of the jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there further questions procedurally going back to Ms. Hogan? If not, then we'll go forward with public safety. And my guess is probably the best format is to have Mr. Hogan make the opening comments, and then the department representative make the specific presentation.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any particular opening comments. Is a portion of the roughly $10 million to list that the governor submitted as items that he felt interested in for inclusion in the jobs bill. So I don't know what particularly I might add to that, other than that's the origin of them. All of these projects, with the possible exception of Fish and Game, basically came from the list that DOT had prepared as being eligible according to the criteria for job skill inclusion. So unless there are some specific questions, there isn't much for me to add to that.
Thank you. I guess then we go to Barbara Mikulas.
I'm Barbara Mikulas with the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And what we have in the jobs bill are 12 different projects in 11 communities. And these are primarily for shelter programs for domestic violence and sexual assault victims. And the projects all meet the criteria of the jobs bill. They are for renovations, upgrades, and additions to existing buildings. So I don't know if you want me to go through it kind of project to project or answer questions. I'd be glad to do that.
Questions by the committee? Representative
Gall. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Marking an easy list, Mr. Chairman, could you tell me for which of these are in rural Alaska, which of these construction projects?
There are projects in Emonic, Kodiak, I don't know if that's rural, Nome, Sitka, Valdez.
Are there any work going on in communities of less than 1,000 people?
Emonic.
What is your plan to deliver service to the rural communities of construction?
Well, this isn't construction. It's renovation and upgrades to existing buildings.
And so it's where we have shelter programs in rural communities where there is no facility. Though probably the major way that we provide services is through travel to those communities. So it's not necessarily having a facility, it's traveling out to the community.
So you mean if somebody needs shelter in a small rural community, they have to get on a plane and go to the city?
Well, that's one option. And in many cases, the programs that we fund provide travel money into those programs. But another option is that many of the programs that we fund are actually helping rural communities develop safe homes in those communities, which are volunteer organizations. But we don't have a facility in most rural communities.
Final question, Mr. Chairman, then. Is it your intent, the FY89 budget, to develop programs specific to ensuring that these small communities are getting the sort of services you just described, in other words, using the staff that works out of these buildings to ensure development of, as you call them, safe homes in the small communities?
We have those programs, as funding allows. And we'd be glad, I mean, and we'd like to develop more programs, that's for sure.
But it's not your intent to do so in FY89?
Well, rural outreach has always been a priority of the programs that we fund, and it's always been my personal priority. So it would be our intent, as funding allows, to do as many things as we can in rural areas.
And that would be a priority of yours for FY89?
It always has been, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Senator Fisher?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Barbara, the Women's Resource and Crisis Center in Kenai, when that started, it was billed that we would never seek state money for capital. They had fundraisers, everything went great. I guess my question is, did they come and ask the state for this, or did the state volunteer to come up with this $105,000?
All these programs were, all these proposals were generated from the programs that we funded. So they asked for that money.
They asked for capital dollars.
And that ended up, at the end, being kind of a controversy because at the end, there were some people that actually did want to come in for state funding. So in the beginning, they built most of the shelter, and Kenai, almost totally with volunteer money, has built that shelter. But toward the end, they did come in for a minimal amount of state funding.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Bickley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Barbara, if you look over the governor's basic criteria.
Yes.
The A, and this, of course, is in most, probably the most important part of this, is meets a need. Mm-hmm. Project meets a meaningful need. Generally, this does not include non-essential or marginally necessary proposals. And I know I brought this up at a hearing before, but I didn't have the opportunity to ask you directly. The Juno Ware Shelter, you have listed here $91,000, and one of the proposed needs of that shelter is paving the garage. Could you give me a little bit more breakdown on that and what the real justification is in paving the garage and how that really meets a meaningful need and is not marginally necessary?
Well, there's two parts to the project. There's a garage underneath the Juno facility that was never finished. Mm-hmm. And I would assume that the garage is for both clients and staff. And right now, there's very minimal parking over there. It's a real problem parking in the street, and there's a little tiny parking lot. And so what paving the garage would do...
Did it not meet the local standards for amount of parking? Is there not adequate parking because it didn't meet the local... Doesn't borough have standards as far as how many parking spaces would be necessary for...
You know, I'm not totally sure. Rena McCurlia from Aware is here, and maybe she could answer that question. My feeling is that it probably met it with the garage, but I'm not sure if it did without it.
Maybe you could just continue on the needs of the paving.
Okay, and so in order to use the garage, it's not been finished. It's not fire safety. And so what the garage has been sitting there is just kind of this empty hole with a dirt floor. And so in order to use the garage, it needs to be paved and it needs to have firewalls, and that's what the project is for. In the case of clients, I think it is an important project because it's often important that the car not be known, I mean that it not be noticed, and then there's the problem of where to park it because there's so little parking with the shelter.
Chairman, if I might, is it not usable then, or you can't park in there with the dirt floor?
No, you cannot. It's not being used for anything but storage right now.
I see. I've seen a lot of garages around the country that don't have the benefit of a paved garage, just have a gravel or dirt. I don't know if it's just mud or if it's gravel or what it is, but I still fail to see how that's an essential need to have it paved as opposed to leaving it with gravel or dirt. And still being able to park in there, but maybe not getting your feet dirty as you walk into the building.
Well, I know for certain that it also needs the firewalls, and that can't be used without the firewalls. It's also my understanding that it does need to be paved, but I'm not totally sure about that.
basically the same bent to the question that under the Anchorage Abused Women's Aid in Crisis Shelter for $106,000, security fence with surveillance cameras and alarm system, kitchen renovation, replace the cabinets and countertops, fireproof the kitchen, add 3-compartment sink, build a 20-by-15 heated storage shed on a concrete slab, and build a 12-stall carport and wood storage cabin benches. Could you kind of give me another reason why it's an immediate essential need to have a 12-stall carport constructed at that shelter?
I don't know that. I'd be glad to find out, though. I could get back to you if that's right.
Mr. Chairman, I think, you know, I don't mean to pick on this section of the budget, and I'm certainly supportive of the domestic violence program and the shelters, but I'm a little bit concerned over some of the proposed expenditures of these funds, and I think we can sometimes get carried away with how we spend these funds, and a little disappointed in some of these proposed expenditures.
Representative Corchelle, you had more questions.
I was going to say maybe some of the problem is that the justification sheets weren't on each one, but maybe it was just in the book I was looking at. I didn't see a separate justification sheet for each project. Were those submitted for each of the projects?
No, we didn't. It was just mostly a description of the different projects.
Was there some reason for that? That it seemed like some of those questions may have been answered mm-hmm. with a more complete rationale for each project.
No, I just didn't know that there was any need. I mean, I didn't realize that that was something that would have been helpful, so I'd be glad to do that now.
That's true. That still may be helpful.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question on all of these grants. Are all of these to a facility which is either owned by the state or owned by a nonprofit, or are some of them to a privately owned facility that's rented?
There's one for certain that's owned by a church, and that's the program in Nome. The church has rented that shelter to Nome at very inexpensive cost throughout the year, so it's more than, it's a donation. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the most important project that we have on this list because the shelter is really inadequate. But most of the rest of the facilities are owned by the private nonprofits, and or we have a deed of trust that goes back to the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There's no one that's owned by, nothing that's owned by a totally private individual.
Thank you.
How does that work? Do you have some kind of a lease provision where you're going to put $102,000 into, $102,000 into something that's owned by a church? Do you have a long-term provision? So that's
we have a requirement that there be a lease, and they've had, the requirement that we have is only that the lease be for a year. They have had a long-term relationship with that aid, with the organization. And I don't know, I think they could possibly get a long-term lease if you would put that as a requirement, or if you want that, we'd be glad to consider that. And the church has made a commitment to the shelter.
Yeah, I would want to check with the people who represent that area, but it would be my inclination that you should probably, in your negotiation of this program, request that there be some kind of a formalized long-term commitment for the investors.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Galt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two brief things. How many beds are being increased by this construction? How many more people can you serve?
I don't, other than the 8-plex in Fairbanks,
which item is that?
It's Fairbanks Wicca Renovate 8-plex. I don't think there's anything else that has additional beds. And the 8-plex would be like 8 apartment units. It's for transitional housing. So I would assume that each one of those apartments could hold 4 to 6 people.
And the rest of this is for administrative space? Or?
Well, for the additions, no. The Ketchikan program is to add a wing to the shelter for children's services, and the Kenai program is to add an addition for batterer services. So I don't know that there's any that's administrative space. The rest is renovation and upgrade.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I just would like to say I think that these are very important facilities, but the way they're situated and so forth, I'm going to hope that in the public safety budget there's some direct indication of how these facilities that are not in rural areas are going to be in fact used to deliver service out into the rest of the state where this problem also exists. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions? If there aren't any further questions, then Barbara, we thank you. If you would stay there, we can go on to DOTPS Harbor Project.
Mr. Chairman, Keith Kirkin, Deputy Commissioner. We have actually three statewide allocations in the bill. We have local service roads and trails, harbor projects, and handicap accessibility in that order. If I can speak about harbor projects first, if you like, I have a handout on that further describing the breakdown.
Why don't you go ahead and do that? Pass out the handout. I know there's been at least one change.
Yes, on the harbor projects, our further investigations on the Jackalope Bay project have indicated that the degree of acquisition of property is greater than the amount of repair. Our determination is that that's not an appropriate jobs bill project. It's a project which we'll have to pursue in some other budget because it's not labor intensive. We have on the list before you now a proposed replacement project, which is the Soldovia Harbor Repairs and Upgrades, which is replacing portions of the existing float systems which were installed just after the earthquake and which have been damaged recently by some large boats and simply by time. The list before you breaks down the items that are included in the bill, and I think they're mostly self-explanatory. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to speak to those.
Okay, are these fuel tax related or what is that?
Well, the original concept in our capital budget was that we were going to have two general statewide, or actually regional, southeast region and central region harbors projects, which would be approximately equal to the amount of watercraft fuel tax collected in the state. These projects have been culled out from that $7 million list as being projects which are more appropriate to the jobs bill. They're generally smaller. These fall, and actually the $3 or $4 million list of harbor projects fall generally into the category of deferred maintenance. There is no specific mechanism by which the watercraft fuel taxes are put back into projects for those harbor facilities. And the routine and preventative maintenance that's necessary to keep those facilities in good working order hasn't been done. And we have a fair backlog of that kind of work. So these projects came from within our original about $4 million list of deferred maintenance and improvement projects that, at least in our minds, we see as having relationships to that watercraft fuel tax.
Do members have questions? Senator Jarrah?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this an annual thing where the marine fuel tax is used to upgrade harbors every year?
My information is that it's an annual request. The extent to which it's actually been done, I think, is that the amount of money spent on those harbors has been traditionally less than the amount of taxes collected.
Considerably less. I think this is the first time I've seen it in the 10 years that I've been here.
That's less.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is perhaps to Mr. Hogan. In spending $2 million of the administration's $10 million just on this item alone on statewide harbor projects, in looking through the list of communities to be targeted for these harbor improvements, how would you rate or analyze the economic conditions in these communities as compared to other communities suffering economic distress statewide?
Mr. Chairman, I have not done that with regard to these projects. Perhaps Mr. Kirkin can answer. I think what the point the department is bringing up is that there was a program a number of years ago wherein the watercraft fuel tax was automatically appropriated for waters and harbors projects. That ceased in the middle 1970s because substantially more money went into waters and harbors in general for new port construction and some maintenance from general fund sources. this is an effort to bring to the legislature's attention the fact that, that there has been perhaps a less than adequate maintenance program of existing facilities, but and so the number was chosen basically based on the watercraft fuel tax net receipts. But I've done no economic analysis of the community's particular target.
So then, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, then in putting together all of these monies, you really, the administration wasn't considering overall economic problems throughout the state as a criteria in where and how to spend these monies.
Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to that, we did not consider it as a primary factor. If we came down to some choice between two otherwise equal projects and the difference in unemployment in a segment of that area which would be affected by that project was shown to us to be significantly different, we would use it as a criteria.
Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Durkin, are these all state-owned facilities in the harbors context?
They are, for the most part, state-owned and operated by the communities in those areas.
Are there some, okay, are there some that are owned by the communities themselves?
I'm not aware of any that are. There may be. For the most part, almost all of these, as far as I know, are state-owned, operated by the communities.
Okay, when you went through and laid out the criteria for these, or when you looked at the ranking or the priorities for these harbor projects, what was the primary criteria that you used to determine which of these would be funded and which would be funded?
Well, frankly, for this particular list, out of the larger $3 or $4 million list, it was a matter of choosing some of these smaller projects so that we could have more of them. There are probably other legitimate harbor projects which generally are in the $500,000 range, which we probably could just as easily justify in terms of priorities, but we would have fewer harbor projects in the jobs bill. So to some extent, we simply chose the ones which were smaller, more assuredly ready to be out this summer, and had very minimal design work attached to them, and were more of a maintenance nature. Mm-hmm. Than a more traditional design and construction project.
It sounds like size was the most important thing. If it was a small project in nature under 500,000, that was the most important thing that you looked at.
Well, that was an important part of it, just to get a greater number of projects to affect a greater number of areas.
For instance, when the one from Jackalock Bay Harbor Repairs and Acquisition, the 150,000 that fell out, was the Seldovia Harbor Repairs and Upgrade, was that the next one on the list that actually was small in size, that fit that category? Or were there other ones that were small in size also that this beat out then in that process?
I think that's essentially true. I think that our central region was responsible to look at their best feeling about the next project of approximately that value. To take the place of that project.
It was, Mr. Forson, it was the only other project?
No. Our central region simply determined that was their best candidate as the another project of approximately that value that had the best reason to be done.
And what was that reason? What was the best? I mean, after size, then what?
I didn't
two
go
projects that were 150,000.
I didn't go through with our region what the other projects were that they considered prior to choosing that one. So, without knowing what it was that they rejected in favor of that, it's difficult for me to answer that. I could go through, I could get back to you on what other projects they considered in comparison to Seldovia Harbor.
Mm-hmm. I'd be curious about that. I know just as an example, we've got a boat harbor off of Bethel that serves over 500 fishermen. We have there what are called non-structural floats, mm-hmm. which are basically mud banks. And the fishermen pull their boats up on the mud banks, and when the tide goes out, they're high and dry, and they have no access to be able to go out and fish then, earn a living or subsist for their families. And there's about $150,000 that requires to put structural facilities in there so they can actually get to their boats at any stage of the tide and participate in the fishery. certainly disappointed that the administration didn't see that. It certainly fit the size category of about $150,000. I felt the need was very high, but I was disappointed in the administration that they didn't see fit to include that project in their harbor's projects list.
I can look into that one, and I can find out what other projects were evaluated at that point in time. My assumption at this point is probably that they were looking at existing facilities that needed to be repaired as opposed to new facilities.
Even if they were the same dollar amount. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Harrell.
Yeah, thank you. One more question, Mr. Chairman. I know when we went to public safety, it sounded like the shelters had quite a bit of input there, I imagine, on an individual basis. I know that we have a pretty active harbor masters committee throughout the state, and they are quite active. Did they have any input in this at all?
I don't believe they had any specific input in the overall list of our projects.
Why wouldn't they? I mean, don't we fund them to meet several times during the year and to talk about their problems and to identify priorities that they have from within their organization as they see this pretty much statewide?
I don't know that we fund them. I know the commissioner attended their one of their annual meetings last fall in Homer, and they spoke to the question of the use of the watercraft fuel taxes and supported a commitment to focus the use of those funds on the maintenance and upkeep of existing facilities. I think that the only reason that they haven't had specific input into this list at this point in time has simply been the timing, the amount of time available to do this.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me there that you don't need to pull the whole association together like any other group. They do have elected officers. They have a president, vice president, whatever, of their association. You would certainly think that there would be some consultation. It's not like this thing was put together yesterday and submitted today. And it's not like we started talking about the jobs bill right at the beginning of the session. There was some discussion prior to that. But it seems to me that if we have organizations such as this that should be aware of what their basic or specific needs are in their communities, and they certainly can assist the state in pulling these projects together, and possibly we would see projects like the one in Bethel not being left by the wayside.
If there aren't any further questions on DOT harbors, let's go to local service roads and trails. That's the one you want to do next, Mr. Chairman.
Let me find, Mr. Chairman. The local service roads and trails program used to be an annual appropriation within the department's budget. It used to range between about $3.5 and $6.5 million. The monies are distributed statewide on a formula that is in statute. It's distributed amongst five regions that are described in statute on the population and area formula, and then within each of those regions is distributed further in population and area formula to the organized governments within each district, and then the unorganized areas of those districts basically present a road and trail plan to the department, and we handle it as a grant program. The $2 million here, I think you have a copy of the how that allocation would work in your book there. And because the program hasn't been funded for about 3 years now, in the past what happened is the communities prepared a five-year improvement plan, which was submitted to the department, which we approved. Those haven't happened for a couple of years. We have, in the last month, taken out those old plans, dusted them off, and we have been in contact with most of those communities to update those plans, to see what projects have been performed and which ones haven't been performed and which new ones have been created. And we believe that we can, with this $2 million, rejuvenate that program and have a viable list of projects in every community for the expenditure of these funds this summer. Particularly in the rural areas, most of this work is done on a force account basis. by the communities, in some cases using equipment and personnel provided by the department. In the urban areas, generally these funds are added to other existing local roads projects as a supplemental source. And
I have a question on administrative costs. Your breakdown shows $100,000 for administrative costs, or 5%. Is there any way that we could be assured that that's all it's going to be?
I think that basically all we do is we fund a part-time grants administrator in each region, and then if there is any actual technical engineering required for a project, those costs get charged to the grant itself. So I think that the 5% is for general administration and overhead is
isn't fine. Grant administration already in the operating budget?
Not for this particular program, because the program hasn't been funded for several years.
But you have grant administration in the operating budget, a fairly extensive rundown.
We have grant administrators who are CIP funded, who have to charge to the source of funds that they're administering.
Questions by the committee? Representative Porcio?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. You know that there's a bill going through the mill on providing another formula for distribution of local service roads and trail funding. What's the position of the administration regarding the allocation of this $2 million? Is it your intent that this money go out under the current formula?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We don't see any choice in that at the moment. The bill on the change in the formula was basically... at the moment, population and area are considered on an equal basis, and we proposed to consider area as 70% of the formula and population as 30%. That effect of that legislation would essentially shift about 100,000 out of every million in the program into the unorganized areas from the organized areas. We feel that that's an appropriate fine-tuning given the fact that at this point in time, with the lack of general funded road projects, that the federal program is essentially biased in its criteria toward urban areas, and we feel that adjustment to the LSR&T program is appropriate. We don't know that that change is going to be made or that it's going to be made in time for this money. So our assumption and the numbers that you see before you here are based upon the 50-50 existing statutory allocation.
Mr. Chairman, I would just note that even though that proposed formula does hurt my community, I'm certainly willing to look at a formula change and how that may or may not affect different districts. But for the purposes of this, it's my assumption that for this money, the kind of distribution that we see before us is the distribution that's going to take place.
Is it correct? What we see is what we got.
Yes.
Thank you. Further questions on local service roads and trails?
Chairman.
Senator Yealy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just the criteria that this came about with, though, how did you come up with going and reinstating the program, whereas before you hadn't had it? What was there a groundswell support for it from the communities, or is it just something that you came up with from your office, or how did it all come about?
I think that it's been a program that's been very popular in the communities, always has been. It's one which we get a lot of good responses to when we talk about reactivating it. Part of it is because of local hire, and part of it is because those kinds of projects simply aren't addressed in any other continuing, recurring funding mechanism in the budget anymore. We find it to be a very sort of grassroots popular program.
Mr. Chairman, so it goes right directly in all the cases as listed here, like to the city of Kodiak or the borough of Kodiak or to the borough of Kenai and so on and so forth. Is that right? Directly to them.
They submit a list of projects that they'll do with that money. We approve it.
I see.
And we pay them. It's basically a grant.
Is there any further questions? Crestland Survey, I think, is next. Or what do you think?
handicap?
Okay, do you have half of the...
Chairman, the trust land survey is the DNR,
that's DNR
university.
Right. That's broken in half between DNR university and not DOT. Let's get for DOT.
We did have a $500,000 for handicapped accessibility improvements.
Okay. Did you go through that? $500,000. Lots of Randy. Do you have any comments on that? Are you going to make a...
On the handicap accessibility?
Yeah.
We had submitted a list of state facilities that were our highest candidates. I don't know if that's in your book. You can make it available if it's not. Essentially, projects ranging from $2,000 to $35,000 is about 20 of them chosen based upon their volume of public use. They're the urban hatcheries, office buildings, forest campsites, and pioneers' homes. And they're out of a larger list of several million dollars worth of handicap accessibility upgrades that we have been assembling for some time now.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much is in the current fiscal year budget for handicap accessibility projects like this?
I believe there's about $400,000.
And has any of that money been spent or allocated to projects?
That money, not to construction, that money has been allocated and to doing the research to identify all the projects and their relative necessity, and part of that has gone into establishing this list, and that need is identified at something around $6 million statewide. So we have the remainder of that, I think it's $400,000, and this would mean we'd have something less than $1 million to begin work on that $6 million list.
Mr. Chairman, too, I think that in Fairbanks, we took a portion of our allocation and put some dollars for handicapped access onto the university campus in Fairbanks, and handicapped access is obviously one of those issues that's real important to the Governor's Council on Handicapping Gifted and particularly to handicapped persons in the state, so I appreciate the department and the Governor's commitment to continue to fund those kinds of projects.
Thank you.
Quick question, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that most of these projects are in most of our larger communities are right near there. A couple of years ago, we had a situation where the state was doing some handicap upgrade in Dillingham, and DOT brought in outside contractors and outside people to construct those jobs when we had a number of people that were sitting around idle and not doing anything. How do these jobs get out here?
Mr. Chairman, most of these projects are projects which they're replacing doors and hardwares and remodeling restrooms and building ramps and facilities. They're projects which can be done probably through our maintenance workforces, hiring temporary employees or doing small contracts. None of these projects are of a size where I think you would be able to attract, if you wanted to, an outside contractor. We haven't established an actual program of which projects will be administered as actual big contracts versus simply force account internal maintenance workforces doing that work, but would be happy to make some proposals on each of those as to how we intend to do it and to make some appraisal of how in each community we'll go about it ahead of time so people can have a chance to say if they agree or not.
Mr. Chairman, let me just just remind the department there that this is a jobs bill intended to get out, get employment out to the people. I'm a little bit concerned there if the department is going to construct this or do all the work themselves when you're going to be using people that are employed 12 months out of the year and receive a check every month, or if they take an early payment, they get it twice a month. These jobs are intended to get out to the people, and I know of an instance there that if it were funded there, it fit very well under this category, and I know that the department brought people into the community of Dellingham when there were local people there able and willing to work. And in fact, I remember the videotape that showed the people there carrying picket signs out there with the snow blowing and whatnot. And I guess I'm a little bit concerned if what I'm hearing from the department is that you're going to use departmental people to do these jobs when we ought to be making sure that the people that are going to be doing these jobs are the people that are sitting out there that are unemployed right now that have the skills to do this. Unless I'm reading you wrong or misinterpreting what you're saying, I wish you'd please correct me.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, when I said department people, I was talking about temporary seasonal hires to do the work, which means people that aren't right now working for the department, as opposed to us putting together a package of contract documents and bidding it for people who are now in the contracting business giving us a bid. We're very sensitive to that criteria of the jobs bill, and we have no problem in whatever assurances are required to make sure that these projects are done by people who need the work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, Mr. Hogan, apologize to you. I had made a comment in an earlier hearing on the jobs bill that there were not any projects in my district, and I was displeased at that. I expressed that to you. I now see that there is a $25,000 appropriation for restroom modifications.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If we could keep going,
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had just before we leave DOT, an overall question. We had talked earlier, maybe formally or informally, about the possibility of putting on a lapse date onto this capital bill, which would be different than the way we normally handle capital projects. Some of us are interested in pursuing that so that we achieve our goal that these truly are projects built this year and that unused monies aren't recycled forever and ever through appropriation, reappropriation process. When we talked to DOT, or what I understood before from Commissioner Hickey, we had some disagreement over what a reasonable lapse date would be. Do you have an opinion as to if we put a lapse date on the bill, what would be necessary to, I assume, pay ongoing bills, the bills that would trickle in after construction?
Mr. Chairman, on the question of a lapse date, I think you could put anything you wanted on there in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 years. Obviously, on a project-by-project basis, if one were shown to be too tight, it could be amended at a later date. I think anything that's in the neighborhood of 2 years and up is workable from a lapse standpoint, because it can always be addressed a subsequent year.
Thank you.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, I make one comment. I agree with that. The one caveat, I think, would be the local service roads and trails program. Because those funds are distributed on a formula basis, some communities basically get an allocation that's very small. In the past, what's happened is they've essentially put that in the bank, and they've kept it for until 2 or 3 years. Allocations have added up to an amount of money that they use to do a project. Now, it may very well be that in this year that there is no amount of money that's too small, and they'll find a project to do with that money. But in terms of the way that program has performed in the past, the communities have chosen, and we've given them the right to hold that allocation for 2 or 3 years. So the LSR&T program, maybe we'd want to think a little bit more about making it distinct, or maybe we decide that we just make it clear to everybody that you need to spend this money for the next 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, I think in this regard, we would not encourage that. That does not seem to be in the spirit of this bill. I think if the community is going to receive money under the local service roads,
if we can, we're now behind schedule, so if we can just try and keep moving. This is a fairly simple one. Brian Rogers from the university. If you want to start it up.
Mr. Chairman, this is the University Trust Land Settlement. Brian Rogers is very conversant with the details. Basically, this is the result of a long scuffle between the university and the state that has been amicably settled. We need to address the question of which lands, according to the settlement, belong to the university and what the value of those lands is. What this program would do is split equally between the university and the Department of Natural Resources would be to conduct a surveying program to actually transfer lands from the state to the university.
Is there anything you need to add to that, Brian?
Mr. Chairman, it involves surveying approximately 20,000 acres of land, largely rural projects. Most of the land is not located in Anchorage or Fairbanks particularly. Would be spread and would primarily be done during the summer season.
Thank you. Are there questions? Senator Jarrell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian, when the university lost its land earlier, where did they basically lose it?
It was from the Municipal Entitlements Act allowed the municipality of Anchorage to select approximately 160 acres owned by the university in Anchorage.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to be known there to the committee that you know, the rural part of Alaska is paying for the land there that Anchorage received.
Disagree.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian, are there any plans when you are surveying out these rural areas, what's going to be the recruitment process for the people who are going to be working out there? I realize the surveyors, of course, are kind of difficult to get qualified surveyors in rural areas. Many times there aren't registered surveyors, but many times available local people that can help in the process of brushing out or whatnot that's required in surveying.
Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid I can't answer that question because it is a cooperative. It will be a joint venture, really, between the university and the department. I can get with the principals involved in that today and get an answer back to you as to what their plan is. I can would certainly encourage them to use local labor because that's the whole intent of this bill.
Thank you. If we don't have any further questions on the university, that brings us back to, I think, the completion of the projects initially proposed by the governor's office. One thing I would like to understand, can we assume that we don't have any more changes coming out of the governor's office at this point?
Mr. Chairman, we're waiting for a piece of backup on one change. We have a few small suggested changes, not material, one of which, of course, is the removal of the Jackalope Bay project. But we have some adjustments in two items and an addition of two items, all within the same amount of money. But I lack one piece of backup, and that's why I would prefer to bring them all together as one series.
I would hope that the administration and anyone else, if they have any final technical changes, would get them to the House and the Senate committees before we close this meeting by 4 o'clock today. So they can actually, because we're going to have to go to staff and get the bill drafted as a CS for both the House and the Senate tonight to have it before the House and Senate.
Mr. Chairman, I would have those changes to you right after lunch. I would have had them at the opening of the meeting, except that we lack this one piece of backup.
Representative Adams?
Yes. In the bill, Section 1 is the permanent section, not an appropriation section.
Yes,
section
sir.
2 is the implementation, not an appropriation section, which our legal feels that this violates Article 2, Section 13. And the way it reads has to be tainted to the lawsuit. Do you mind that we eliminate Sections 1 and 2 off the bill and then the administration be able to put a letter of intent?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be an appropriate change. I see no problem with that. I think the letter of intent probably would be very appropriate.
Thank you. Let's go on to Election District 1. start going through the difference. I think, and we need to apologize to Senator Jones because I know he's been here and back and forth, and we are behind schedule now, so we'll try and move through this. Senator, I apologize for the delay. You can understand that we had some questions in the administration.
No problem.
We have the backup in the bill before us. If you would just quickly run through the proposals from the Ketchikan area for the jobs bill.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to say that these projects have been scrutinized by Representative Taylor and Son and myself, and we've worked with our local communities to put these together. It's their priorities, and we all agree, and we feel they meet the criteria. They create jobs, and they're a lot of projects that are needed when you do have a lot of economic activity already in your area. Through the private sector, it creates a lot of social needs, and you'll find a lot of these projects meet those needs. If you'd like to, I'll go through each and every one of them in detail or to whatever extent you'd like.
Well, I think the members have the list before them. If there are specific questions, Representative Korshoff?
I just have one question I know that has come up before, and that's on the funding for the Ketchikan Hospital remodeling expansion, $1.6 million. The question there is, does that give us a project, one that can be initiated and hopefully completed this construction season, and two, does that leave us with a completed phase or completed facility as opposed to a hole in the ground requiring more money?
Yes, Representative Pochot, it is a project that stands on its own. It's a phase one project of a large renovation of our hospital. It's a parking area, and it does stand on its own.
I guess the way to explain it, when they get done with this project, there will be no steel rebar sticking out of concrete. You will be able to drive a car in and park your car in it. And it is a separate project, and it is ready to go.
On that particular project, would you like to see that particular project as a force account?
As a force account?
Yes.
I just went through the job bill. It's all right, Representative.
I think. Yeah, I think I understand what you're pointing at there. This is appropriation to the city owns the hospital. And I'd just rather leave it up to the city of how they want to handle the construction on it, whether they want to try to do it themselves. It has not been their practice. The practice is to bid it out, but this is a $1.6 million project. There are a lot of contractors in our city that are local that are capable of bidding this and that have the bonding capabilities and the capacity to do this job. So I don't really see that it's going to go to an outside or out-of-town bidder.
Most of these projects are in the dollar range that will allow the local contractors some advantage, really.
Okay. Well, your municipality can, the money can go to your municipality, and if they so desire, they've got local contractors to work this particular project.
Yeah, definitely.
I just didn't want ADC and Twining to be around, or that's what this question is.
Senator Ewling and then Senator Hensley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that that on the DOT projects, we had a project for the Loring Log Breakwater and Boat Float, which is essentially to install a log breakwater. Is this an additional amount of money also for that same project that's going to be going, that DOT is going to be working on?
The $20,000 for the Loring?
Yeah.
That's just to put a breakwater in out there. It's not a...
Oh, this is under the governor. Okay, I see. This is under the governor. Mr. Chairman, second question would be the Ketchikan shipyard. Is that something to do with the ferry system, or is that just upgrades for the city?
No, that is, we put the marine maintenance facility in there,
right.
and in the process of that property has been nominally subdivided, I guess, between one side, the DOT maintained jurisdiction over it and a float in the dock, and the rest of it's been leased out to a private operator who actually runs the shipyard. This is to divide the electrical service between them.
Right now, it's one entry for the electrical services, and they have to split up the charges, and it's hard to allocate those charges when you have just one entry.
Does that mean that the state right now is paying for the electrical charges for all of the shipyard?
No. They're split up. It's split out, but it's hard to allocate those costs exactly through when you have just one electrical service entry into the yard. But the demand charges right now are split up on an allocated basis.
It says in here that it'll save us $6,000 a month. Does that mean now it's costing us $6,000 a month?
That's right. It takes whether that's our fair share, we don't know. Because of the one, we want to make sure that is our fair share.
Okay, Senator Hensley?
Yes, I've got a couple questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. On the waters and harbors projects there, I understand that those funds are to go to the Department of Transportation. Is that correct?
That's through the governor's portion of the job bill.
Do you have any idea what wage levels they're anticipating to pay?
Well, I would imagine it'd have to be meet the little Davis-Bacon wage schedule.
So they would have to contract these projects out to by public bid?
That's right.
And in my understanding and following up Senator Adams is question on the hospital project, I understand you to say that the contract would go to the municipality. The funds would go to the municipality?
Yes.
Now, under the present state of the law, are they required to pay the Little Davis-Bacon rates on a project like that?
I believe they are. I think that comes under, but
I would defer to your expertise in that area, Senator.
Most projects, I think, within our city meet that.
Can you positively state that they have the latitude to determine whether or not it's Little Davis-Bacon project or a force account project?
Under the force account theory, if the city wanted to do it themselves, I think they could just do it and they would just pay their employees what they normally pay their employees. Grants to municipalities that go out to bid, someone at this table has got to know, we've been doing it for years, are grants, state grants, municipalities subject to Davis-Bacon law? And the answer is yes.
So, in other words, we'd be paying a premium virtually twice the hourly rate that is really the present union scale.
I'm not sure in my community, Senator, that Little Davis-Bacon is twice what the hourly rate is. It's a little bit higher than the private sector, but I'm not sure it's double.
Thank you.
You obviously want to keep moving here. Real quickly, there's two projects here that you have.
It's nice to be election district one occasionally.
I thought we'd ask all the questions on one and then let the rest slide, but no.
I figured out.
I just wondered what the alcohol drug kitchen was. Is that obviously, I assume it's rehabilitation, but it doesn't say that. Well, it says Ketchikan Alcohol Drug Kitchen, and then the second one also funding for the totem pole construction.
Let me describe the project. The existing kitchen facilities are inadequate to service the center's consistent patient load. Both the fire marshal and the last department of environmental conservation inspectors recommended that commercial equipment be installed. The project required extensive carpentry and electrical work. Medicaid. The residential treatment component, the Ketchikan Alcohol and Drug Abuse Services Program, consistently houses nearly 20 patients. Patients are currently being fed through a contractual arrangement with a local food service contractor, which is prohibitively expensive. So that's the reason we're going over this project.
Mr. Chairman, in the essence of time, I'll defer my...
Senator Fisher. Very, very briefly, the $100,000 for the totem pole carvers. How many carvers do you expect to be put to work?
I'm not sure, Senator, how many that will entail. We have backup on that, extensive backup on it. We can provide you with that if you like.
I can guarantee you that it's very labor intensive.
Mr. Chairman, the other, just briefly, is the Petersburg School, where it takes $2.1 million to do it, but now we're putting the Site Preparation Foundation. What happens if Phase 2 doesn't come along? Is that going to be able to stand that way for a while?
This on Petersburg,
Petersburg Gymnasium. Community, yeah.
The community has pledged themselves to finish the project with whatever local funds, if it's necessary. But they feel that this project is their top priority. We've talked to them about it. We said, you know, we get the foundation in, what happens? We said, hey, you know, go ahead with that. We need it bad enough. By gosh, we have to finish ourselves. But, you know, Senator, there's a lot of projects throughout the state, I guess, that need to get started. And $2.1 million is a lot of money for one small community. I think this is a step to go ahead and start this project. And for a community the size of Petersburg, it's hard to come up with $2.1 million from the state to do it all in one whack. So I think this is a good way to approach it. And there's a lot of projects that need to be started in the state, I think, on a phase project basis, so that we're not stuck with a large bill all at once in one year.
Does the school district own the building, or is it separate of the school district? I guess that's what I'm looking at. Is it the school district that owns the particular
Yes,
building?
It is.
Okay.
Thanks.
Senator Brinkley. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't mean to draw too much attention to this.
Yes,
sir. But following up on the Chief Johnson totem pole appropriation.
Yes.
And I think this is a concern that Senator Hensley had earlier, talking about the Davis-Bacon wages that are going to be paid on probably most of these projects. But then when you get to the totem pole carving, they say that apprentice carvers are paid at $10 per hour.
This money goes to the Saxman. It'll be a force account through the city of Saxman. And the pole is being donated, so there's no money going into materials. All this money will be into labor. They do have a carving shed at Saxman. They just built a huge ceremonial house there with carvers, and it's. I think in the next few years, when you think of totem pole carving, Saxman will be synonymous with that. It's a very aggressive program. And I don't know if any of you know Nathan Jackson, but Nathan is the chief carver there, and probably one of the more respected carvers in the world.
I might add that they're looking at approximately 6 employees on this, and they would like to carve it. They plan to carve it on in the downtown area, so that throughout the year, so that as tourists come through, that would be quite an attraction.
Mr. Chairman, I think this illustrates a point that Senator Hensley was trying to bring out earlier, and I think that the community of Saxman is to be commended. If they take the scarce dollars that they're allocated, $50,000, and instead of paying $28 to $30 an hour, which would be probably the Davis-Bacon scale for a totem pole carver, they do it through a force account and pay much more reasonable wage, probably one that is pretty standard in the community, $10 an hour, and are able to stretch their funds much farther and accomplish a lot more. And I think that we should commend them and their efforts to do that.
They're all sitting down in my office. There's 35 delegates from the city of Ketchikan, the community, the Chamber of Commerce, ready to deluge themselves on this legislature. They'll be by your office sometime today.
Look forward to that opportunity.
I didn't know that little Davis-Bacon put totem pole carvers
constitution. Well, once they get organized, I'm sure they'll be
Mr. Chairman, thanks. I'm not sure that I want to spend another day
the rest of the day listening to the issue of whether or not we are doing things under Davis-Bacon or not under Davis-Bacon. Is there a policy of the chairman at this point? Are we going to lay out a policy in the front section of the bill? What's the issue? I'm not sure that
I don't know if there's an issue before us. This is an appropriation bill. I don't think that we can do anything in the, under the Constitution in an appropriation bill dealing with Davis-Bacon. I think it's appropriate, at least initially, to let people make their points, though, and I've tried to allow the leeway to do that. I don't expect this to go on the whole day.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it is an issue, and it depends on what we think we're trying to do with this legislation. If the purpose is to create more jobs for more people who are possibly unemployed, then it is, as far as I'm concerned, a major issue. Because my understanding is from the administration's own discussions about the subject is that there's at least $20 million of excess wages that we're being required to pay because of Little Davis-Bacon law. And I took a look at the Little Davis-Bacon rates for 1988 and held they're higher than last year. We're asking the state to pay a premium for wages at a time when the economy is bad and people are unemployed. And I think that's the issue. And if you want to skirt the issue, then fine. But I'm telling you that we could have $20 million more dollars worth of projects and thousands of more jobs if we face the issue.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be appropriate, and maybe it's a discussion that the committees ought to address in a letter of intent regarding our direction in regards to Davis-Bacon in this legislation.
Well, we can certainly discuss it in a letter of intent. My point was, if we're going to have any real effect, I believe it takes legislation. And you can't pass substantive legislation constitutionally in an appropriation bill. The debate is certainly open. Representative Gault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if it will help or hinder the discussion, but in my understanding of the way the Little Davis-Bacon Act functions, the municipality, in this case Ketchikan, but in all the rest of the cases in this bill, had the opportunity to force count these projects and hire personnel and go through with construction in that way. And unless I misunderstand, this gives a lot of discretion to the municipality to make a local decision on the subject. And maybe the debate over whether there should be requirements or not is more appropriate to, as you indicate, another piece of legislation insofar as no one is requiring that these be bid out, especially those projects that are of small size. So I'm not sure I understand the thrust of the problem. Certainly there would be a problem if there were such a requirement. But it seems to me that if the cities have the capacity to force account, that the course is completely open to them.
I just want to note for the committee that under that theory that point men have hazardous duty pay, I would like to collect a premium from all the districts following District 1 today for leading the way here today. But if there are no further questions.
I just have one comment, Mr. Chairman, that I would hope that these jobs go out for bid for the private sector jobs. And that's my desire, to see that these jobs are out of the private sector and not held for government. It's not my purpose, anyway, to create more government jobs for the private sector, small contractors. Thank you,
and thank you both. We appreciate your efforts and your backup and your participation. If we could go to Election District 2.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, I've got a list of projects. I've got the backup. I'd be happy to answer any question, or if you'd like a presentation, I'll make a presentation.
If you could give us just a two-minute rundown without going into specific projects, and then we'll, if there are any questions, any members can ask any questions on specific projects, that would be the easiest way to do it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee can find the materials for District 2 on page 2 of the handout that's been provided this morning bill, if you prefer. The grants to municipalities, well, let me first say there are two grants through agencies. one at the end of Bay Road, the other is Haynesboro Road and Bridges. In case of the end of Bay Road, that actually belongs down the road. It'll be run through community regional affairs. But the Haynesboro Road and Bridges is an opportunity for the Haynesboro to address some of the small roads and bridge problems. It's a third-class borough. It doesn't have road power, so we're giving money to DOT, and they've worked out a agreement with us so that there will be no administrative cost charge. It'll be passed through the borough and either used by local labor or, where more appropriate and equipment is needed, the DOT maintenance crew can get some extra hours. But the intent is mostly for small contract projects. All of the rest of the projects below are, to the best of my knowledge, intended to be force account projects. Let me just take a quick look and see if there's an exception. In the case of Thorn Bay, that is part of a larger project, but still, to the best of my knowledge, is going to be operated by the city. They're not only using that for construction, but also to leverage other grants, and they do expect to be getting right to that. All the others are fairly small. The Crave project is a larger one. It is a continuation, I guess a third phase, of an ongoing water project, and this will allow them to make further headway. All the projects are expected to go in construction almost immediately as soon as the weather permits. The Angle water line was an emergency health and safety issue, and that's going to be addressed through this grant. Heidelberg School roof is another urgent health and safety one. It's got tiles falling off the ceiling. Cape Roads and Drainage, Block Roads, Prep, and Natural Capital Road Drainage are all your standard city street and city street drainage type work. It'll all be local labor. And so it goes. Skagway's waste facility is site preparation. The public restroom is for the tourist season. It's looked at as a major part of their tourist infrastructure for obvious reasons. And Yakutat's two road projects, especially the second one, are quite urgent. They've got some serious slope stability problems there, and if we could get several $100,000 from DOT to work on slopes, it would be well spent. But this is what was available, and they want to get right to work in the more emergency areas where material is actually falling down on the roads and houses. That's kind of the nature of these projects. I'd be happy to go into detail on any one of them.
Are there questions by the committee? If there aren't any questions, we thank you.
Thank you.
And we can go to District 3. Is there somebody? Oh. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. In District 3, most of the projects are municipal grants, with the exception of the smaller communities, which would be Port Alexander and Tenneke. These probably would be used through the force account system because of the nature of the projects, being that they're smaller projects. Other than that, if there are any questions, I'd be pleased to answer them or try to explain to you what they're attempting to do. Most of these projects have been on their list for 2 or 3 years. They're all street ready. Well, a couple of my areas, I have no streets, but they're all trail ready and set to go, and they've been waiting for several years.
Are there questions by members of the committee? If there aren't any questions, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
District 4. Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your book, you'll note that you got the backup. There's three projects that are provided for in District 4. Just very quickly, the first project is an appropriation of $2.5 million in general funds for the University of Alaska Southeast Library construction. That's an ongoing project. The first phase of that project was appropriated last year. Construction is ongoing. This amount of money would allow that construction to continue without a break in the construction phase. Phase two of the project is labor intensive. Major material was ordered during phase one. It's expected to provide employment for 20 to 24 individuals throughout the project, with peaks as high as 40 to 45 individuals. history of reviewing the contractor on that project. The history is that he has maximized Alaskan Hire of the on the first phase, and also on other projects that he's completed in his community, such as the Juneau Pioneers Home. 98% of the man-hour weeks were Alaskan man-hour weeks. That is the biggest appropriation for our district. The other two projects, one is $376,000 that would go to the same borough of Juneau for schools, fire, and life safety code upgrade. That is listed in the book. It's broken down. We've left a little bit of latitude for the city and borough of Juneau to be able to use that money as they see fit, but it is designated for schools, fire, and life safety. And the third project is for roads, retaining walls, and drainage, also going to the city and borough of Juneau in the amount of $364,000.
Thank you. Representative Hudson, I represent Holmes. Do you have anything to add?
Well, I'm just here to back up Jim.
Thank you. Just one question. The University of Alaska Library is one of those projects which already represents a hole in the ground. And one of the concerns was that we not create new things that we have to finish. But essentially the Juneau delegation felt that that was their top priority to finish that. I think that's a responsible decision, and it's a different decision than, you know, just a simple application of the criteria might have provided, but it's a very logical decision. It's a decision I think the governor's office agreed with, and I think it's a positive decision. But you allocated an awful lot of your energy into one thing, but it's completing what we essentially got into last year.
I just might point out, it isn't simply another building, it isn't just another home. The library is an essential part of maintaining the University of Alaska. It's an essential part of maintaining accreditation. And so it's a real key element in future development of the University of Southeast, and that's why we felt so strongly that the project should be
created. Representative Mr. Chairman, either Representative Ballmer or Senator Duncan, does indeed the $2.5 million complete the project?
The 2.5 does not complete the project. The total second phase funding for the project was 4.5. This 2.5, of course, allows construction to continue throughout. The money that's there will run out about May or June of this year. This allows the construction to continue, allows them to go to bid by April 15th. And this will take it through the next appropriation cycle, and hopefully we'll be able to continue the construction at that point with another appropriation at a later time. So this does not complete the project, but it gets it all enclosed, gets it the heating system in, the electrical system in, gets it ready to go, and it just needs that additional appropriation to continue.
What is the price of the completion?
The total price of the project, the initial appropriation was about $5 million, about $9.5 million total for the project. And we appropriated appropriated the first phase of that last year. In addition, the city of Juneau, through an arrangement with the university, contributed $500,000 towards the construction of the library through some leasing of some land. So a major part of the appropriation is already there.
So there's about $5 million to go beyond the...
No, excuse me. We've appropriated... Right now, the need out there is $4.5 million. This $2.5 million reduces it down to $2 million additional. If I confuse you, I'm sorry, but that's... I might also add, in the backup, if you'll note, there are letters of, maybe you don't have them, but there are letters of support from, for example, the Juneau Chamber of Commerce and others who view the library as the top priority of this community.
Are there further questions on District 4? Thank you very much. And that brings us to District 5. We're gaining on the schedule. District 5, Senator Fisher, Representative
Swackhammer. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We don't want to delay the movement. Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, committee members, though all the projects in District 5 represent requests that are a local priority. They're street-ready projects, labor-intensive, and will encompass several trades. Public works, road construction and repair, utility upgrades, including community water and sewer, and solid waste disposal improvements amount to about 85% of the district's allocation, and life, health, and safety and other district priorities make up the remaining 15. So there aren't that many projects, but if you have any questions, we'd be glad to Representative Swackhammer and I are ready to answer questions.
Representative Swackhammer, do you have any initial comments? Questions from the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hensley.
I had a lot of questions because I couldn't find my book.
Thank you. And that brings us to District 6 and 7. Now let's go ahead and take District 6. If Representative Cato would run through that. Or Senator Kapula.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those items in 6 before you, well, sometimes they weren't the first selection of the district. They are those that are job intensive, are continuation of former projects, finishing up programs, or at least some stage of current ongoing projects that will not only create jobs during this particular spring and summer, but will also, in many cases, provide either economic opportunity or future jobs. You start in 6 at Prince William Sound, Bear Creek Garage, that's just completion of the EMS facility that's out of the edge of Seward there. It's a modest amount. Seward Camelot subdivision electrification, we had a flood there 2 years ago, caused great damage. We put some funding in last year, and this is the balance of the funding that needed for a minimum upgrade of some of the poles and service into that area. Again, it's directly related to the flood problems of a year ago and didn't get picked up by federal agencies. Hollis Hendrick Park and the containment dock, park improvements, those items come as a request of the city of Cordova. The Cordova area is a wore-out mining town on the edge of the ocean, and they're trying to upgrade the facility so that they have some alternatives to purely a fishing community. They're trying to, and there's some substantial local investment made in tourist additions and also, there's some federal-related investment there that needs to be, the area needs to provide some extra match into that, and that's in the Cordova Park improvement. Hollis Hendrick Park, again, is around the hospital, and that's just picking up a lot of the recovery of that area after the new hospital construction. It's job-intensive in each case. The impervious liner, well, it's kind of like, Cordova's kind of like Ketchikan, limited areas presently, and we have a substantial problem there with seepage into the harbor unless we put this impervious liner taking care of the sewer facility and the waste facilities, rather. And it's an absolute necessity. Into Valdez, I'll let Representative Cato commence on the Valdez portion, and then we'll come back to anything, and we do have backup here.
Thank you. Representative Cato.
The Valdez barge dock is a very essential thing. It needs to be finished so that it can allow barges to dock, this sort of thing. It's labor intensive. The tent and camping area and sanitation is one of our largest projects, well, one of the most important projects. This has to do with the canneries and things like that. The bunkhouses that a couple of the canneries have are full. This is the area where the people, and we, this one processing plant will be hiring over 700 people this summer. And up to this time, they have merely just parked their tents and gone about their way, and it's a real problem for the city.
Provides fresh water into the area.
Yeah, and particularly the sanitation situation. The motor coach parking area, we have a tremendous amount of tourism in Valdez. And if you're aware of which is now Westmark, but Sheffield sits, it causes a lot of congestion around there because of all the tour buses that there is no place for them to park. And this would very definitely clean up that traffic problem. And also, as I said, it's labor intensive. The one thing about all these things, as far as the Valdez area are concerned, is that these very definitely have spin-offs in the community, along with being labor intensive, long-range spinoffs to take care of these problems.
Valdez put several $1 million into the steel support area just this last 2 years, so that this is just picking up one little region that they've rebuilt, reconstructed, and made available, and they have to upgrade it so that it can be used for this parking facility. They've already spent the money to build into the ocean there.
Representative Brown?
I have a question upon completion of your presentation.
Pardon? I didn't.
I said I have a question if you're through with your presentation.
Yes.
I was curious about the Chugach Electric Hope Electric Line and wondering whether it would be good to appropriate that to the Appalachian Power Authority. We have experienced that sometimes the grants of that type that have gone directly to the communities have not been technically as supportable as they might, and I'm just wondering your thoughts on why it's proposed as a grant to the local government as opposed to going through this agency which would have expertise.
I wasn't certain it was in that particular part of the presentation, but I'm happy to talk about it. That goes over in the Hope area. There's an extension needed, and that funding, of course, is insufficient to do the whole job, but it will help a lot in providing electricity into those areas on the way to completion. There's quite a number of facilities along the way. We don't have strong objection to APA doing it. We've felt that they weren't as efficient as they could be. It is a public facility owned by the state, really, to do this sort of thing. We put it in CNRA only to see to it that, one, it definitely goes to the area it's intended to, and we have some paper trail here, and doesn't get used for something else. That is my main concern. Two, that they're alerted to the fact that we want as an efficient, and I've heard this discussion going around here about who does the job and what they get paid, wanted as efficient and as much service as possible. And we're down to essentially clearing out right away for it. And a couple of intelligent people are managing it out of the CNRA or the borough could handle it. But I don't object to APA doing it. I just want them doing it efficiently and get as much done as possible and not just have a little plan and all the money's gone already before we get anything done. That's our concern. That's mine, and that's Mike's too.
One of my concerns, too, is when we contacted APA on it, which we did do, they were a little reluctant to take anything that small. They wanted a larger type grant. Now, they didn't refuse, but they were a little reluctant.
They're interested now. The director has indicated an interest over the last 24 hours or 48 hours, very intensely. I have no problem. I just hope we don't have to come back and say we got half as much as we could have gotten for the money we spent. That's the only problem. I'm perfectly satisfied with it being put in the APA, knowing my concern.
This portion of the project would be for the right-of-way clearing and not for the actual electric installation?
That's correct.
Thank you.
I apologize in advance if this question was already asked. Did the dollar amount discrepancy get cleared up on the district total? I noticed the district total here is listed at 1729. Is that?
My understanding is when it was all put back together that we have an equal amount. One district, there was some money taken out for another project in another area with the permission of the whole delegation from that district, and where you start buffering districts, it's hard to say. You know, it's kind of like Platte Road. Part of it's in my district, part of it's another district, and that's what's happened here. But we've got occurrence. If there's a little more in one, a little more than another, from the whole delegation's concurrent.
Mr. Chairman, one other question. I noticed that you show in your contribution a $150,000 grant for Keene's Head, and I noticed that the state parks also has $150,000 for King's Head Park development. Are you dovetailing this appropriation with their appropriation? Is it is the total project $300,000?
Yeah, the total project is even in excess of that.
Thank you.
We put it in several years ago, and it's pretty substantial, you know, on the far edge of Seward. Actually, the Seward area has just become particularly interest in that development. It hasn't had, at least locally, it hasn't had a lot of interest until very recently. I think Seward envisions itself as a substantial stopping point for all kinds of tourism beyond just the fishery, and this is part of that.
Okay, if we don't have anything more on District 6, could we go to District 7? Senator, please stick with us, and then...